Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast. This is episode number 193. Today is November 22nd. We are watching the Sunday night football game, Kansas City Chiefs, Oakland Raiders. Las Vegas Raiders. That's very important information because we got some polls to cover later in the podcast that had to do with some of the things that are going on in this game right now. So I want to put that out there as an asterisk. Please join me in welcoming my co-host, Izzy, the Pharaoh of Fantasy, Elkafoss. Izzy, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Should we do an entire podcast in Arabic?
Yeah, so it's just going to be me talking in Arabic?
Well, I know curse words.
Yes, you do. I've taught you those. Those you do know.
And that's all I got. So anytime that I think that you're saying something profound, I'll just toss out some curse words.
I like it.
All right. I could probably do that in English too, I guess. That's basically what our show's paradigm is all about.
That's true.
Izzy says something profound and I just curse.
It is polled, Hurley. The poll is up.
It is polled. Before the podcast, Izzy and I were having a discussion. He actually asked me which song is better. Is it actually called Maria Maria, by the way?
Yes.
That's the name. I thought it was West Side Story. Maybe not.
I don't think so.
Which song is better, the Carlos Santana song Maria Maria, or the Enrique Iglesias song Hero? I think it's Hero. Izzy is surprised by that.
I think it's emphatically Maria Maria.
Yeah, and I just think like in a vacuum, it's Hero. It's a little bit heavier of a song. It's a little bit more of an iconic song. And no, if
dude,
I was in the mood for guitar licks, it'd be Maria Maria pretty easy.
I would say Maria Maria is more iconic than Hero.
No. It's not even the most iconic of Carlos Santana songs.
Yeah, but is Hero the most iconic Enrique song? But he's not really iconic. He's just a cornball.
Well, that's what you think because you're not a female.
I don't know, man.
The ladies
that song
love
is corny.
Enrique.
That song is corny. You get caught singing Hero by Enrique and people are like, man, that's kind of corny.
Yeah, but he
but
puts
if you
so
get
much
caught
emotion.
Singing Maria Maria, be like, yeah, that guy, he gets it.
All right, man. That's one man's opinion. And so, by the way, we're going to be talking about songs for this entire podcast. We have no football news to cover. We're not going to talk about Lamar Jackson and his kind of dud performance. We're not going to talk about Taysom Hill coming out. We're not going to talk about running backs over the age of 26. And we're definitely not going to talk about our Dynasty social experiment for week 11, are we? Just songs.
No, just songs.
Just songs.
First comment, you would need to add at least one 2021 first to the Hero side for this to be an even trade.
Have you put it in the calculator yet?
No, I have not, but we should put it in there.
And I will admit that if Carlos Santana is an artist and Enrique Iglesias...
Why do you call him Santana? Why do you...
Carlos Santana. Because then is that the proper way to say it? Carlos Santana.
I guess. I don't know, but you call it Maria Maria instead of Maria. Maria.
What do you mean? You say Carlos Maria. Santana? Like the most horrible way to pronounce anything like Hispanic at all? Okay, Carlos Santana.
There you go. That's better.
Enrique Iglesias.
Yeah, I mean, you're in America. Speak American.
America, yeah. Ricky Iglesias.
I like it. Whatever, just don't try to be something you're not. You're
Carlos
not.
Carlos Santana. Don't try to be Carlos Santana. Unless you're Carlos Santana.
Yes, yes.
Then you try to be Carlos Santana.
Yes.
I don't know. I think I'm being something that I am. I'm borderline fluent in Espanol.
Are you though?
So don't I get? Yeah. Yeah.
But you know Mandarin. Are you more fluent in Mandarin or?
No, not even close. I know how to order food in Mandarin. Like my chicken fried rice is kai chao fan. And I always say no onions, mucho. And by the way, that's Cantonese.
Oh, it's Cantonese. So you know Cantonese or Mandarin?
My Mandarin is so bad that it's Cantonese. I know, some Cantonese, but no Mandarin.
Okay, zero Mandarin.
I know more Russian than I know Cantonese.
Interesting.
But Spanish is my jam. Okay. Give me a throw a sentence out there. Give me. By the way, this is all getting cut, so it's moot anyway. But
no, this is going in. It gave me. I took 2 years of Spanish in high school.
Dos años.
And yes, and I probably paid attention for maybe 10% of it. But I know how to add, like puedo ir al baño. I know how to ask for the bathroom.
¿Dónde es el baño?
Yeah, hace frío. I'm cold.
It's cold.
Mm-hmm. It's cold. So I know like a little, I mean, bits and pieces here that I remember, but I'm not going to Mexico or España and making any moves. Let's put it that way.
Look at how cultured we are, though. You know, mm-hmm. We're just two super cultured dudes recording a podcast about not football.
Correct. So let's start recording about football.
Let's start recording about football. By the way, I'm the host, John Paul Hurley, on Twitter, at FFHercules. You can also find Izzy at DTC_IzzyE. What does the E stand for anyway? Is it Enrique?
Enrique, yes.
Enrique.
Yes.
I like that. It's Izzy Enrique. I'm going to change your name again.
God, I wish, man.
We do have some sweet topics, though. I think the first segment I'm going to entitle Under Center, starring Lamar Jackson and Taysom Hill. Neither Izzy nor I want to talk about Taysom Hill, but there's a lot of different things that Taysom Hill impacts that we want to cover. So we will be talking about him. Starting with Lamar Jackson, Izzy, I'm going to ask you this. Lamar Jackson, I was pretty high on acquiring Lamar Jackson. This was the week to acquire him because he's got a string of 3 or 4 games where he faces bottom 10 to 15 defenses, pass defenses. Mm-hmm. And he's had a pretty tough road up to this point against difficult pass defenses. And I thought that he would return at least close to form from 2019, and that just wasn't the case. So is there cause for concern with Lamar Jackson now?
Yeah. So I think this season might be chalked for Lamar. Defenses have figured out a way to stop him. Or not stop him, slow him down. And I think he needs an offseason, and the coaching staff needs an offseason to figure out how to make him dangerous again. I guess I shouldn't say how to make him dangerous because I think he still is dangerous, but how to turn that danger into production.
And he just ain't doing it, man. He's not getting it done. It's unfortunate.
Well, okay. So if you really, relative to what he did last year, he's not even close to getting it done. He's still a top 10 quarterback, but it's not enough.
It's just, it's really unfortunate because people didn't draft Lamar Jackson as a top 2 or 3 quarterback to be in the top 10, you know, like they are looking to compete and he's just not really winning games. He's not a game winner for you right now. Kyler is.
Russell is. Mahomes is. Josh Allen is. Herbert, believe it or not, Herbert is. I mean, if you look at average points per game, there are 4-6 quarterbacks. I mean, what is the line, though? I mean, here's the thing. What's interesting about the quarterbacks, listen to this. There is one quarterback averaging 28 points per game. There is one quarterback that averaged 27. That was Dak. He's out now. Averaging 27 points per game. One quarterback averaging 26. One averaging 25. Two averaging 24. One averaging 23. One averaging 22. One averaging 20. And 3 averaging 19. So it's like there's really not a monstrous gap between like 1 and 2. Like there isn't like a top 2 and then everybody else. It's just like there's just a nice progression up to the top. But then when you really look at it, you're getting 8 extra points right now over Lamar Jackson from Kyler, which is massive. I mean, that's 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So when you put it into that context, yes, it's a big deal. Even like Herbert and Josh Allen are 4 points per game higher than Lamar.
Yeah,
Lamar is basically putting up. He's having a Ryan Tannehill season. They nearly have identical fantasy points.
Yeah,
And that's not ideal for Lamar.
So what's the play here? Obviously, people aren't going to give him away. Like, I tried to acquire him after he's had a pretty rough start, and people aren't giving him away for like any sort of discount whatsoever. People are holding. So what's the play here?
The play is to try to acquire. And the reason for that is he still offers such a great floor because of his rushing. So is his ceiling pretty shitty right now? Yeah. I mean, the most points he's put up in a game is 28.2, but the fewest points he's put up in a game is 13.5.
Not bad.
So you have a pretty good floor there with 13.5 a game. Ideally, you'd like that in the 15-16 range, but it's really not that bad, especially considering that this is his down year.
Yeah.
And the rushing floor, I mean, he's still going to probably be around 800 rushing yards, which isn't what he did last year, but it's still a nice cushion to have where you're getting 800 yards a year from your quarterback.
Yeah.
And then hopefully he can put together his passing game numbers. Because, frankly, he's regressed in that category, and I think it might be, which is surprising, because I feel like teams have kind of taken away his ability to rush, and he's not really capitalizing with his ability to pass. Like,
no.
They found a way to limit both. And I'm not the type, I'm not a, it's not like I'm a professional game planner, right? I'm not a coordinator, so I can't really tell you exactly what goes into the war room, right? Where they're sitting there trying to figure out how to stop Lamar Jackson. I couldn't tell you how to do it, but they've obviously figured it out.
Yeah. And you're right about the floor too, just kind of looking at his statistics so far this season. His worst game was against the Chiefs in week 3. And obviously this is scoring dependent, but he had a little over 15 fantasy points. And his best game was week 1 against the Browns, and he had just over 30 fantasy points. And he is always in between 30 and 15, So, he just doesn't go below that. It is a wonderful floor. You know what to expect from him, at least from a floor standpoint. So,
yes.
And I would say, if you're looking to acquire him, which I'm going to continue to try to force the issue, but next week he plays the Steelers, and the week after he plays the Cowboys. Steelers are ranked 3rd against the pass currently. Cowboys 13th, according to MFL. And then he plays Browns, who are the 20th, Jags, who are 29th, and Giants, who are the 23rd to finish out the fantasy season. So I think if you're looking to acquire after the Steelers or after the Cowboys is a perfect time, because maybe people will start to get a little bit tired of it, and you can get them on a little bit of an upswing to finish the season off.
Yeah, so you're saying buy him after week 12.
Yeah. And then if it bleeds over into week 13, you're kind of safe, like the Cowboys. They actually did pretty well against Kirk Cousins. I know it's Cousins.
No, they didn't. He threw for like 303.
Oh, did he really? So their rank is going to be going down then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep, definitely after week 12 then is the lesson here.
Yeah, and I agree with you only because I feel like if he just continues to do this, he's really not going to be discounted much more than he already is.
Yeah, right.
So you're really not gaining much by waiting. The only thing that you can do by waiting is watch his value eventually go up, because I think he does enough to perform better than what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I agree. So maybe I'll rephrase it. You have a full week to acquire, a little bit over a week to acquire Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Especially because I know a lot of leagues' trade deadlines are coming up too. So it's that would be a good one to target,
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the thing that sucks is and this is kind of why I've always stayed away from Baltimore pass catchers, is I can't see Lamar ever being a good enough passer to be able to support multiple receivers.
Yeah, I can see that. Especially because it's volume and efficiency. He's got neither of them this year.
Right. And people were super high on Marquise Brown. And we don't even know if he's bad. If he's actually Cheeks, or if it's Lamar. Would Marquise Brown be good with any of the other high-end quarterbacks?
I will say he looked bad today. He was dropping really easy passes, where he's wide open on slant routes.
He missed a couple, yeah.
Yeah. He didn't look good. Did not look good, but yeah. Yeah, so that's Lamar Jackson. I think rounding it out.
Let's ask this. what would you buy Lamar Jackson for? Like, what are you paying to acquire him?
Maybe what I'll do is just real life instead of just talk, I'll tell you what I have offered for him.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, here's one. I offered Herbert in a 2022 second for Lamar Jackson, and that was rejected.
This week. This was before this game.
Yep, it was on the 18th, so that would have been 4 days ago, Thursday.
Yeah. Dude, you got to imagine that would get accepted tomorrow.
After this week and seeing, like, isn't it funny that it works that way after 1 week? So much has changed. Like, wouldn't you would almost rather have Herbert ahead of Lamar at this point, straight up.
Okay, so we actually had this conversation. I joined the values. We had a value summit on somebody's podcast that'll get released sometime, hopefully this week. And my whole thing was, I'm not against the values shifting on a week-to-week basis anymore or having that 1 week. We reach a break point where it's reasonable to make a drastic shift like that. And most would consider draft drastic. Some might already have Herbert ahead of Lamar. They might be quick to it. But I think when I say it's reasonable to assume that Herbert is ahead of Lamar, I'm looking at it more from like a universal perspective. If you plotted, let's call it 10,000 data points, and right now I think over 5,000 of those data points would be Herbert. It's similar to a poll, right? If we were able to get 10,000 votes on a poll right now, from dynasty owners, I think over half of them would be on the Herbert side.
Yeah.
Shall I poll it?
I was just about to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the president of the polls.
That definitely are you the poll president? You should have that in your bio.
I'm the poll. I'm the dynasty poll dancer.
You should. Oh, that's kind of gross, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You would pay. You'd pay early. You'd pay to see that show.
Just. The only reason I would pay it is in the hopes of seeing you fall on your head. Yeah, so poll it. And this is cool. It's like live updates. So later on in the podcast, right in the polling section, we'll maybe recap what you got. So what's your guess? You think it'll be 50-50?
I think Herbert has overtaken Lamar.
Oh, easy. I'm gonna say 61% for Herbert.
61?
Well, just there's so much recency bias today. Like these games just happened. You know,
fair. I think you might be right.
Yeah. I think later on in the week when people like kind of like level out a little bit more level headedness, that poll will come down a little bit more even. But I'm going to say 61. What's your guess?
Yeah, I think you're probably in that. I think you're in the right neighborhood.
All right.
Oh, Maria.
It's like if the Weeknd got strung out on drugs, that's what they would sound like.
Yes.
And look like too, actually.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
So I think that's pretty good for Lamar Jackson. I can't wait to cover that one later on, but maybe you can finish your thoughts when we finish up that poll. You're just saying like you're a little bit more at peace with the week to week changes and values.
Oh yeah, because it's a supply and demand thing. I think we talked about this a little bit too. I get it. Like the demand for Herbert is significantly higher than it is for Lamar, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like the only people that are really going after Lamar are the ones that recognize that his ceiling was 2019 and he's capable of returning to that form.
Yeah.
Right? It's possible. That's in the range of outcomes. So they're chasing that. Whereas others are now projecting Herbert to exceed his year one production. And to be honest with you, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Sophomore slumps happen a lot more frequent than we'd assume.
Yeah. Dak Prescott, Josh Allen.
Yeah. They did have sophomore slumps. And then year three, maybe, I mean, obviously we're in Lamar's year three. Maybe he has his year four bounce back. I don't know. I'm betting on it though. I think Lamar, I don't think Lamar is at risk of losing his job. That's the thing.
No, not even close.
And that's why I have no issue just kind of waiting on Lamar to break out, is because I feel like he's so close and he strikes me as like a momentum guy. Like if things are flowing and he's in a groove, I think it just continues to snowball.
Yeah.
In a positive direction. So I'm just kind of waiting for him. I'm waiting for Stella to get her groove back.
I like that. It's a good way to cap it off too. It's and you're right. It's supply and demand right now. Herbert's in higher demand. You know, it's a you go into an ice cream shop, and there's the vanilla, and it's pretty full right now. Not many people are going for vanilla, and there right next to it is the delicious orange Herbert. And everybody's eating that stuff right up, man. Toss it on a cone, go nuts. Delicious orange Herbert.
80 votes already, Hurley, in the first like 2 minutes.
Wow.
74 to 26.
Oh wow. Okay, yeah. So we're starting with a big gap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
So 77 to 23.
Let's let that one simmer for 12 to 15 minutes, and then we'll leave it covered and let it simmer for 12 minutes. It's jasmine rice right now.
So I offered somebody a trade.
Oh yeah,
for Lamar. I offered somebody Aaron Rodgers and a 2021 first, likely late, likely like 109 to 112 for Lamar.
I heard about the counter.
and the counter was Aaron Rodgers, the 101, Trevor Lawrence, because that's currently where the pick stands. And I think it was a late 2021 first.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, I scoffed at it, obviously.
Yeah. And at this point in time, we've basically identified that Trevor Lawrence is probably, at least if not right now, he will be eventually maybe worth more than Lamar Jackson, right? Just by himself.
Yeah, I mean, we had texted about this.
Yep.
You had said in your text before this week that you think Trevor Lawrence will be valued higher than Lamar Jackson at some point before next season. And I think he already might be. Like, that's what's funny.
I think he already is. And you kind of thought I was nuts. You're like, you're doing it wrong. And like, the good dynasty players are capitalizing on that right now, which is fine. But like, I'm trying to get ahead of a value spike from Trevor Lawrence. Like right now, it's not going to be anywhere near what he's going to be like after the draft.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely going to be that post draft spike for a few weeks. And I get it. There's just so much that what happens if, and I don't know what the risk factor is on this, but it has to be considered. Let's say Trevor Lawrence is serious and he does come back for another year. What does that do to his foul? What does that do to that? You trade for the 101 and he goes back to school.
That's
now
painful.
What?
Yeah. Fields. Yeah. It's not nearly the same.
Fields is good. Yeah.
He's not going to hit as hard as Trevor. Yeah.
So it's like, you have to consider that as a risk proposition in considering that trade.
Yeah. But Fields is a pretty good way to mitigate risk, I guess. It's just like, you definitely lost, you know?
Yeah. You lost in the deal. And here's the thing. We are assuming Lamar Jackson. We both assume Lamar Jackson is going to bounce back, but we've been wrong before and we'll be wrong again.
Yeah, there's built-in risk.
But yeah, I mean, we could look at this in a year and be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe we didn't trade Lamar for frickin' Tua in a year."
You never
know.
That's
in the range of possibilities. Yeah, you never know. But it's just, I don't know, man. I have a hard time with it. And here's the funny thing. If I have the 101, I'm likely hanging on to it desperately, and I'm not going to trade it. But I have a hard time trading. So if I have the 101, I wouldn't give up the 101 for Lamar. But if I have Lamar, I don't think I'm giving up Lamar for the 101.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's close enough where you wouldn't want to. Yeah.
It's just like, you know what? I've kind of made my bed. I'm going to lie in it right now and see where it takes me. But I'd rather make no decision than try to make the right decision and be wrong. So I'd just stay pat.
So where's the Mendoza line then? So obviously Lamar is your like kind of like right on the line there where you wouldn't go either way. So obviously Patrick Mahomes, you would take ahead of the 101.
Yes.
Kyler Murray.
Yes.
Josh Allen. Starts to get a little more tricky.
No, because I'd rather have Watson than the 101. But I'd rather have the 101 than Allen, I feel.
Okay, so Watson, and then so Allen kind of starts to teeter on your line. What about Herbert?
Yeah, I got to take Herbert.
Yeah, I think so too, because Herbert is doing what you hope Trevor does.
Dude, Herbert is doing all-time things right now. Yeah, dude, you realize that Herbert's averaging 300 passing yards per game.
basically he's like Dak numbers this year.
Not that good. Not that good of pace, but I mean 300. He's basically going to flirt with 5,000 passing yard pace as a rookie.
Jeez, it's insane. Ooh, I got a good one for you.
Tell me.
Russell Wilson or the 101?
I'll take the 101.
Right? Because it's 31 years old?
Yeah, 31. I mean, yeah.
How about Dak Prescott?
I'd only take the 101 because I know people are going to sleep on Dak.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be gone for so long.
Sure. And you think you could probably get Dak Plus for the 101 before correct. People realize that Dak's back?
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't know if, based on looking at Mahomes, Kyler, and Watson as the three, I don't know if I can get the plus on any of those guys for the 101, right? I think you can make a case for Watson, but I really like Watson. Not only do I think he's a great quarterback, but I root for Watson. So it's a big part of it for me. Like, yeah. I want him to be successful, you know?
So I'm proud of you. You've kind of come full circle since we first started having this conversation a couple days ago.
Yeah, you know me. I shift.
Yeah, you've come around pretty quick.
I think you have to. There's reasonable opportunities to stay kind of stubborn in your takes, right? But I think at some point in time, the best dynasty players are quicker to navigate to the players and navigate to where the path is going versus kind of staying steadfast in whatever you think.
Yeah.
And you've admitted that you have that problem in a lot of cases, right? I think Galladay was a big one for you, where you just kept refusing to accept Galladay being a legitimate wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm even still in that. I'm still in that. I haven't come off.
Yeah, so it's like,
yeah.
At some point, it's like clear, like, yeah, this guy is legitimate. So yep, we just got to accept it.
Yep, I agree with that. Yeah, I get pretty stubborn. I'm kind of I am hit or miss though. Like, I think Jordan Howard was the turning point for me. You know, like, I liked the opportunity that who was the running back before Jordan Howard in Chicago? I can't remember right now. Jeremy Langford.
Yes.
And he flamed out so hard. And I liked Langford going into that season. And you're like, no, like Langford, I think you specifically said, I don't know if this is about Langford or about Jordan Howard, but Langford basically sucks at everything and Jordan Howard is okay at everything. And I think that you know, eventually Jordan Howard will overtake because he's just a better talent. And Langford flamed out so hard. And I flipped really quick. I liked Jordan Howard looked so much better. And then I flipped like instantly, and then Howard just like took off from there. And then he's had kind of a storied career, obviously, up to this point too. But I think that was a turning point for me for coming off of guys much quicker. That sounds more dirty than I expected it to be, but
yeah, no, I mean, at that point it was like Jordan Howard, we know what he's good at. Where with Jeremy Langford, he was okay at a lot of things, but he wasn't great at anything.
Yeah, that's what it was. So yeah, I think that was the turning point for me. But yeah, I agree. It's that's definitely a skill that people should hone in on, is finding a way to quickly pivot. I think your biggest story was always Bishop Sankey, right?
Oh yeah, I pivoted on Bishop Sankey. I was a huge Bishop Sankey fan coming out of Washington, and then I think it was the second preseason game, I was like, this guy doesn't have it. Like it's not it.
Yeah.
And then I traded him, and I don't remember what I got a nice haul for him, but I traded him in the preseason.
Yep.
After I had drafted him at like 104.
And he never rebounded.
Yeah. And the reason why I've pivoted is because my biggest draft mistake was taking Donald Brown ahead of LeSean McCoy back in 2009.
Owie.
I believe it was 2009. And that was the draft where it was Sean Green, Donald Brown, LeSean McCoy. What was that draft class? 2009
2009. Yep.
Yeah. So it's like I like Donald Brown, and this is why I've stopped drafting guys that are good at everything, not great at anything.
Chris,
he's
Wells.
A jack of all trades guys. He's just falling into that mold when I realize, okay, he's just not gonna be great anything, so I shipped him off.
Yeah, perfect segue, right? We're going to go into the next segment, And I like to, instead of calling this segment running backs, I like to call this segment walking backs, because these are, or maybe even walker backs. These are running backs that are hitting the age cliff at age 26 or higher. And somebody really close to me that I know on Twitter tweeted something out. I'm going to read this tweet for you really quick, okay? There isn't a single running back over the age of 26 that's in the top 25 dynasty running backs currently. Let that sink in a little bit. 2 years ago, Melvin Gordon at age 27, Le'Veon Bell at age 28, and David Johnson at age 28 were
no, they are age. They're that age now.
They're that so age they were, now. So they were yes. over 26 last year, yeah, or 2 years ago.
2 years ago, they're 25, 26, 26.
Sure. They were all three first-round startup picks. Top 12 running backs that are currently 25 or 26 years old, Kamara, Henry, Zeke, and Joe, I'm assuming Aaron Jones. Aaron Just something Jones. To monitor. So,
and that, and Dalvin Cook's in there, too. I missed him.
Oh, yeah, Dalvin Cook's 25, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So something to monitor as those running backs go into their 26, 27-year-old season. That's something to monitor, like knowing that. Little nugget, right? And that was tweeted out by Izzy Elkafas at DTC underscore Izzy Enrique.
Mm.
So I set it up for you, man. Now you can knock him down.
Yeah, so it's something to be aware of. Jacob Rickroad, who I'm a fan of, he's very stuck in his philosophy, which is okay because it's what's made him successful. He's always a win now guy. He doesn't mess with draft picks and any of that. He tweeted out a response, and he started naming off a bunch of guys that had exceptional seasons after age 27. Now, the issue with his list is that they're all, or most, like 80% of the list was players that had those seasons well over a decade ago. So the times have changed at the running back position. Like, I don't know if we can really be confident in any of these guys at age 27, 28. I mean, let me ask you first. Are you confident in any of these guys? There's only one that I feel confident in at age 27.
Out of all the ones we just listed?
Yes.
So out of Kamara, Henry, Zeke, Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook. Kamara is the only one.
Yeah. And he's the only one for me. I mean, I think Derrick Henry is going to be I think he's still going to be a good running back next year. But I think his value starts to really hit the decline.
Yeah.
But from a performance perspective, I still think that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, because he just wasn't used a whole lot early in his career.
He wasn't used a whole lot, and he's still, like, he's got so much juice right now that even if he loses a little juice, he's still going to be a good running back because his speed is what makes him all, like, legendary, but his power, if you take away his speed, his power is still legendary.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So he's going to probably be like a high-end RB2 when he loses his speed. But here was the list.
He'll be a rich man's LeGarrette Blount.
Yes. Yes. So here were some of the guys that had elite numbers and their ages when those elite years were done. Fred Taylor.
Tiki Barber.
At 27. Tiki Barber was 30.
Curtis Martin.
So here are the guys that were 30. Thomas Jones, Corey Dillon, Tiki Barber, Charlie Garner, Priest Holmes, Curtis Martin. What do those guys all have in common? It was a long ass time ago. That was the answer.
Okay, read now that I know the question, read them, read the names again.
Curtis Martin, Priest Holmes, Charlie Garner, Tiki Barber, Corey Dillon, Thomas Jones.
Well, they're all receiving backs. Most of them are smaller.
Really. Not necessarily. I mean, Corey Dillon wasn't really a receiving
back.
Yeah,
that's true. He definitely was not.
But they're all, I mean, this is over a decade ago.
Oh, so that's what the thing in common they have was?
They, yeah. Like, yeah, it, like times have changed. Matt Forte was 29, so that was within the last decade. Marshall Faulk, over a decade ago. Sean Alexander, over a decade ago. Marshawn Lynch was in this decade. Brian Westbrook, over a decade ago. LaDainian, over a decade ago. Jamal Charles and Adrian Peterson each had it at age 27, which is the age in question.
I gotta say, the vast majority of the names you're reading off are definitely receiving backs. So I do wonder if that's part of the formula.
Well, Sean Alexander was not, right? A vast majority are, yes.
Yes.
So Sean Alexander, no. Thomas Jones
Lynch, no.
was in Virginia, but wasn't necessarily a receiving back in the pros. That from my memory, it doesn't strike me as a guy that caught a ton of passes. I don't remember Charlie Garner, but I believe
he was a 100 reception guy.
Yeah, I don't remember his production, but I remember him being a guy that can catch passes. So he's a 100 reception guy.
He was like one of the first ones. Yeah, he's like one of the OG, like huge volume receiving backs. I'll look up his stats while you're talking.
What year was his age 30 year? Because that was had to have been late 90s, right?
2002. He was 30 years old.
Okay. 2002. So right before, I mean, that was before my time. I was still in high school. So if you look at
by the way, that was the year that he had his 91 receptions, the most receptions in his career.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that was the Rich Gannon, John Gruden times, I think.
But didn't 2002, didn't John Gruden, wasn't he Tampa Bay?
Yeah, maybe. I still think this was his team, though, you know.
And wasn't Rich Gannon gone by 2002, or was he around? Tim Brown was still around?
I think they all were, but I'll look that up, too. That's hilarious.
Anyway, God, we got a little history lesson going on today.
I know, right?
So, yeah, Marshawn Lynch, Sean Alexander, Corey Dillon, let's say, are the only, like, not-plus receiving backs. The rest of them are. Yep. AP is not either. And Eddie George was not a receiving back. So, yeah, majority of the guys, about 70% of the list here is, you know, we're receiving backs.
2002 was Rich Gannon's huge season. That was the Super Bowl season, so I was right.
Okay. So if you think about it, the only guys that have been productive in this decade at over the age of 26 years old, whereas this is like their career year, was AP, Jamaal Charles, Marshawn Lynch, and Matt Forte.
So it's super rare.
It's super rare. And all those guys that we just mentioned were elite for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. Matt Forte had a little decline in his career and then he kind of like had a little resurgence.
Doesn't Frank Gore get like an honorable mention?
He's been, yeah. I don't think he had his career year was pre age 27.
Oh, it has to be specifically their career year? That's pretty rigid.
Yeah, I guess. That's how he has it. Okay, this is what he said. There's been 33 running backs to score 1,500 plus over their careers, finished after 2002. I'm surprised that Frank Gore does not have 1,500. Oh, okay. 23 of them had their best career best at age 25 plus. But I'm not really concerned about the 25 plus. I'm more concerned about the 27. So if you look at the 27 plus, it's probably 14 of those maybe. We're over 27 or older.
I like that better. That helps clarify.
But the thing is with that, if you look at those numbers, those are all the older guys. Now, I get it. There aren't a lot of guys that have hit 1,500 in this last decade, but you can't name outside of maybe DeMarco Murray and AP, DeMarco, AP, Jamaal Charles, and Marshawn Lynch that really carried a sustained value and production after the age of 27.
Not in recent years. I don't think that's what you're going for.
Yeah, and Frank Gore's probably on that list of guys that were, you know, productive.
Yeah.
But it's small. It's not common. I mean, we look at, and this is kind of one of those things where we looked at Gurley as he was the 101, and it was 101 by a long shot. And he was the safest player on the board and so on and so forth. And he all of a sudden had bone-on-bone problems, right? He had knee injury problems. It's just any of this stuff. I mean, these running backs nowadays, there's a couple reasons for it. There's usually committees. It's contract-related. I think a lot of it is the players, now the defensive players. I think it grinds on their bodies a lot more than it did back in the day. I don't know what the actual reason is. It might also be that we really haven't had a good crop of running backs that could be sustained into their late 20s. That could be possible too. Because if you really think about it, the running back landscape has been pretty dry for the last 6 or 7 years.
And I think maybe you're onto something. I think the prototypical NFL running back physique has changed considerably. I think teams look for somebody who's a little bit more multifaceted and can catch the ball out of the backfield. I wonder if the average size of running backs has come down.
So you think that and this might be the truth, this might be the right answer. This is something that I need to go back and do some more research on. So I feel like there's been a shift in the NFL in the last handful of years. So there definitely could have been a window of a couple things. One, running back talent between 2012 and 2016 wasn't very strong. Coupled by the fact that the last 4 years, offenses have really opened up.
The game has changed.
Yeah. And I would say like since 2015, 2016, maybe the 2014 class is when it started. I'd have to look at the numbers, but I feel like there's been a definite shift in the way running backs are viewed, like you had talked about.
Yep.
So I'm going to go do some research. That's going to be my homework. And I'm going to tweet it, hopefully, and bring it up on the pod.
I like that.
But I do want to be cognizant. I think Kamara is relatively safe because the way he's utilized is very atypical.
Yes.
So I feel pretty confident in him being productive 27. We have to recognize, though, we have to be okay with his value dropping significantly when he hits that 27, 28 range.
Yeah.
We got to be okay with that. You know, I mean, 3 years ago, we were still drafting DJ and Lev Bell and Melvin Gordon in the top 12. And Lev Bell is a multifaceted back. DJ is a multifaceted back. Melvin Gordon could catch passes. He developed that in his game.
Mm-hmm.
And their value kind of bottomed out.
Yep.
For three different reasons. But they all happened to be when they were 27 years old.
Yep. That's interesting. Very, very interesting. So this whole entire study was just to kind of throw up some red flags with some of the guys who are entering those seasons, right?
Something to monitor. One.
Yeah.
Two, if you want to make sure you're ahead of the game, next year is probably the time to trade. So this coming off season is the time to trade Derrick Henry.
Dalvin Cook.
Derrick Henry will be 27. So it would be time to trade him.
Sure.
You have another year for Dalvin. Another year for Zeke, even though I've been telling him for different reasons. Kamara, I think, is probably the only one that I wouldn't worry about all that much. Even though Delvin is a very good multifaceted back, and same thing with Aaron Jones, but we don't know if Aaron Jones is going to get a contract for one. And then two, Dalvin Cook's had some injury issues.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see in 2 years' time if these running backs are still, you know, top 20 assets in Dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. That's a very interesting study. And like I said, or like you said, I think it'll be fun maybe next week to revisit this once you've done some research on that 2014-2015 shift. Maybe the game changed and maybe the prototypical NFL running back changed along with it.
Well, if we remember, though, too, it's like there was a 4 or 5 year window where only two running backs were drafted in the first round.
Yep.
And we had said, okay, well, the times for running backs to be drafted in the first round are gone.
Yep.
People have figured it out. But now we've seen kind of more running backs being drafted in the last few years in the first round. And it might have just been an issue with talent.
Yep.
And that's why we haven't seen older players sustain value.
I agree.
So we'll find out. I'll do some research.
Maybe a combination of the two. I think the physique has changed a lot. And then, you know, a lot is true with the wide receiver position too, because like for a long time people were just grinding on big slot receivers, and now we've gone to like more burners, you know, like the prototypical NFL wide receiver has also changed over the last few years, you know. It's kind of the same.
Absolutely.
That would be a very interesting thing to do. Take your research that you discover with the running back position and maybe try to implant it into the wide receiver position also. It'd be a fun discussion.
Absolutely.
And then maybe try to identify the same age cliff with wide receivers, the exact same discussion.
The age cliff for wide receivers from a value perspective, I know is 27 is the last year you can cash out.
But we want to know production. Yeah.
Production wise. Yeah.
Yeah. We know value. We want to know production.
Yep.
So very cool. Yeah. That was the walking backs segment. Well, a lot of recap stuff for next week. Moving into the final segment of the podcast, I initially had a pretty boring title for this segment, Izzy. It was the Dynasty Social Experiment, but I'm going to call it
Pole
Dancing.
Did we talk Burrow? I mean, do we want to pour one out for Burrow real quick?
No, we're going to. This is part of it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Continue.
So instead of a boring title, I'm going to call this Pole Dancing with Izzy Elkafoss, Dynasty Pole Dancing.
Can we get some pole music? Pole
let's
dancer
some,
music?
Let's get some pole music. Would it be Maria Maria or would it be Hero?
I've never been inside of a strip club. So I don't know what music is played for the pole dancers. Do you
know? I can tell you, I go every Tuesday night and then every Wednesday night, also every other Thursday because they have Thirsty Thursdays. And then usually Saturdays and Sundays I'll always go. That's the club night.
Okay, so you're 5 days a week kind of guy.
Five or six.
During the pandemic.
5, 6, or 7, yeah. Okay. But it's even better during the pandemic. It's like there's no lines and there's no cover charge, so.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't tell you. From the few times I was there, it was always bachelor parties, and it was always just, you know, pop music. So.
Okay. So maybe we can play Mosier's favorite pole dancing music.
I like it. We'll call it Pole Mix 2020.
Okay.
It's like instead of jock jams, it's like all I'm sure there's something that exists. Yeah, pole jams. All gross. But anyway, for those that have not been listening to us at all this season, I would say, which is probably not incredibly likely because people are dropping off now as Dynasty wraps up, or Fantasy wraps up. For those that haven't heard this segment before, we started a series of polls at the beginning of the season. And we like to each week recap them because we've discovered a very interesting kind of, I would call it an anomaly almost, wouldn't you?
I would call it more of a
phenomenon.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think we're starting to understand the average dynasty owner more. Like, I'm really trying to figure out how people think when it comes to dynasty.
Yeah.
Because I think if we can figure out how they think, we can take advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we have a pretty good idea of how people think, but I want to be able to really understand it. And then figure out, am I okay or not okay with how people are coming up with conclusions, right? Because we're here to give advice, and if we start noticing that there's an issue in the market with something,
yeah,
we want to be able to let our listeners take advantage of that.
I agree. And that's a good way to put it too, because we've become obsessed with rookies because their value changes so much from week to week based on their performances because they just don't have the history of performance. So now each week we recap these polls that we tweeted out and we kind of have a better understanding of why these ebbs and flows of value keep coming in and out for these players. So Izzy, take it away. I think we start with the tried and true Jonathan Taylor versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The disclaimer here is that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is currently playing and Izzy tweeted this poll up before his game and Jonathan Taylor had a monster performance relative to what he's done this year so far. So
Let's actually end with that because we are going to be going into halftime.
Yeah, and Clyde's doing well.
And Clyde, yeah. So let's give some people a chance to vote here.
Sure.
Right. Let's count all the votes.
So this is the most excited I've been for a week of polls because there's been so many things, so many events that have changed what we'd normally see with these. So pick which one you want to start with.
You know what? Let's start with the Burrow Herbert Tua just because I think it's more likely we kind of pour one out for Burrow. I think we give him the respect he deserves.
I agree
on this. Sad. So did you watch the play?
Yeah.
Tough to watch.
Tough to watch.
So we had texted on the side and we're like, well, we started to kind of guess what the results would be. Do you remember what you texted me? Can you pull that up?
Mm-hmm. Let me pull
that
up.
What did you guess?
I guessed 47 for Herbert, and then I thought Burrow and Tua would kind of fall down close to even. 28% Tua, 25% Burrow. This was before Tua's game, though, and Tua kind of put up a dud and was benched in the fourth quarter. So if I had that context, I would have changed my answers significantly.
Yes. So I said 59% for Herbert, 28% for Burrow, and 13% for Tua. And this is before he got benched. So And then after, I think after Herbert's game, or midway through the game, I think when he threw that beautiful pass to Keenan Allen in the end zone, you had said Herbert going to take 70%.
Yeah.
Mm. So we don't have a huge sample size, which I don't like, but we kind of have an idea. We have only, we have 85 votes. And right now, Herbert is at 70%. Burrow is at 22 and Tua is at 7.
Yeah, that's I'm not surprised by any of that.
Are you okay with that?
Yep, I am 100% okay with that.
What would you need added to Burrow to give up Herbert?
It's funny because I'm facing this question in reality. I've got the Burrow owner is a contending team and I'm rebuilding and I have Herbert, which is kind of funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a super flex league. I've got my quarterback solidified and I'm just kind of building the rest of it together right now. But basically he asked me the same question and it would take a lot because there's now some risk with Burrow, not just because of his injury, but because the Cincinnati Bengals organization is just troublesome. You know, like they refuse to protect this guy. You know, it's a franchise quarterback. So I'm worried about that side of it. And Herbert is just, when Burrow comes back, I'm not confident that he'll overtake Herbert. I'm not confident in that at all. And then you build in his injury. So it would take, in picks, just to keep this simple, it would take at least a mid, if not an early first, for me to want to give up Herbert for Burrow at this point. I would say mid would be the more sane answer.
Whether you're you're rebuilding and contending answer is the same.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah.
So what's really the difference? You're trying to tell me the risk is an entire mid first for you, early first.
Yeah, and I think that's enough to build in my organizational concerns with Burrow, because I don't have any doubts that Burrow will bounce back, and it's just a matter of whether it's going to be before the season begins or mid-season. My inclination is that it's going to be mid-season at the earliest, personally, but it's got that baked into it also.
Okay.
But maybe Herbert continues to ascend, you know, like this could be the biggest boneheaded trade of all time.
True. Could backfire for sure.
Yeah.
Let's say it's not Herbert. What would you give up for Burrow? Like, what are you going to be trying? Like, what's your new trade for Burrow?
Well, let's keep it quarterbacks because that's the most simple, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go down the line on rankings here, and I'll tell you exactly where I would land. So I would rather have basically all of the top five ahead of Burrow at this point. So we're talking Mahomes, Kyler, Lamar. Russell, I'd teeter on Russell, but I'd rather have Josh Allen. And I'd rather have Deshaun Watson. Dak is interesting. I think Dak and Burrow would be close. And then anything after that, I would be pretty easily on the Burrow side. So Tua, Aaron Rodgers, Goff, Wentz, Tannehill, lame.
So Dak and Burrow. You said which one?
I think I'd go Burrow on that in a vacuum.
So you'd rather have Burrow than Dak. Okay. Interesting. Why is that?
I'm questioning myself. I'm just thinking about what Dak's going to bring. Yeah, Dak's going to come in so hot next year. Dak in the offseason will be worth a lot more than Burrow, so I'm going to go Dak. I was trying to project, but it has to be Dak. So I think it's kind of funny. There's a pretty solid line right there, right? Because Tua, Burrow is easily ahead of Tua right now, right?
Yes.
Even with the injury. I think Burrow is easily ahead of Aaron Rodgers at 36 years old. Burrow is easily ahead of Jared Goff. Easily ahead of Carson Wentz. That's such a big cliff right there.
If you're contending, does it change your answer?
No, not really, because you know you're contending, but you're also still trying to run a dynasty team. You know,
right? What's your window of how you run your dynasty teams? Do you look at it in a 3-year window, 5-year window, 10-year window?
I like a mixture. I like a mixture of guys so I can continuously kind of have like succession plans to backfill guys as they start to cycle out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's more like a continuous thing. I wouldn't be able to tell you that I have a 3-year, 4-year, 5-year plan. Like, I don't have that. I just kind of have like a continuous like engine of players I want to backfill as a succession plan.
Well, when you look at players, at what point do you say this guy is now too old for me to want to acquire? Like, it's what is that?
I used to like to try to buy championships, and it was good. I'd win plenty of money and stuff like that. And I think the longer you play, the more refined you get with your game. And I just enjoy like watching like the newer, younger guys come up and make an impact on my teams, and like, you know, studying big booming draft classes. So I think our running back discussion we just had is very close to what I like to do. There's a curve I like to stay ahead of with running. It's based on position, you know?
So what is it for quarterback? So Rodgers for you is too old.
Yeah. I would say like Russell Wilson is kind of like right on that line. He's 31.
Really? Okay. So now here's the thing. When Aaron Rodgers was 31, I mean, he's now had 6 seasons since that 31 years old, and he's been elite ever since. Like, so you trade Aaron Rodgers for Russell Wilson back then, let's say.
Oh, yeah. I love that trade.
Right. But you're still trading Aaron Rodgers at 31, and he was producing more than Russell Wilson. And at some point, Russell Wilson started out producing, and I don't know when that started. It might have just been this year. I'd have to look at a year. But in the years that Aaron Rodgers actually played on a points per game basis, you've given up points for those 6 years.
I mean, maybe like I know that I'm going on a very case to case circumstance here, because Aaron Rodgers had a couple like really big injuries right after that point.
Yeah.
And then like last year, the year before, he was very, his performance was very volatile for a while. So like there was ups and downs. I think there was more ups than downs, but there were definitely some shakiness with him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just relative to what Aaron Rodgers is. And I think the injuries was the issue.
So give me the year that we would have done the Russell for Aaron Rodgers trade. Was it 7 years ago? So 2013?
What do you mean?
Six years ago. So 2014.
No, that's what you would have done. That's what you're saying. You would have done it at 31, and he's now 36. So 6 seasons, because it's not 5 seasons. I have to count as age 31 season all the way to age 36 season, which is now.
Is he 36? I think he's older than that.
I'm pretty sure he's 36.
He's 37 in 2 weeks, but he's 36.
Hey, don't age the man. Okay, 36.
2 weeks. Come on.
Okay. So what is it for you? So let's say 6 years ago. So it would have been the 2015 season. 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Yep.
So he was coming off of a 4,438 touchdown passing performance in 2014. And then he had 3,831.
Yeah, so he got hurt.
Russell Wilson might have been ahead of him that year right away. And then 4,440. And then 1,716, injured again.
Yep, 2017 he got injured, yep.
I would honestly say that the majority of these seasons, Russell Wilson outperformed him.
What about 18, 19, 20?
2018, 4,425. 2019, 4,026. Most consider that a shaky season, which I would agree. And then this season. I think Russell Wilson's probably outperformed him most of those years. And that could be could be an outlier.
Yeah. Did he played all his games last season too? I think
he had a bad
hurt
season,
last season. Devontae was hurt most of the season last year. That's what it was.
Most of the season? I don't know about that.
Yeah, Devontae was hurt most of the season last season.
God, he's 27 already. Mm.
Devontae? Yeah.
So if he was hurt most of the season, he still had 83 catches, 1,000 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So that's pretty impressive for being hurt most of the season.
Oh, sorry. He missed 4 games. He left early in. Yeah,
he played
four
12 games.
He missed week 5 through 9. Yeah. Or 5 through 8. So he missed 4 games.
That's still not enough for Aaron Rodgers to pin it on. But I mean, behind Davante Adams, there's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the entire offense struggled. Yeah. Matt LaFleur's first season, so on and so forth. But besides Aaron Jones, who killed it.
So we kind of got way off topic. So you're asking me like how I like to construct my season. I give you it's basically like a retooling, rebuilding window, but what's yours? How do you construct your teams? What's the term you look at?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always when a player becomes inflexible.
So you're also not like a 3 year window or a 5 year window. Your yours changes.
No, I go by ages. So I know when, and it's not the same for every player. At the quarterback position, because there's elite quarterbacks,
yeah,
that they lose value when they hit a certain age. Like if you think about it, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, like they were still, even when they were 40, 39, when Tom Brady was 39 years old, he was still a top 10 dynasty quarterback.
Yeah.
Right. And same thing with Drew Brees. And with Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be the same thing. Like he is playing at an elite level right now.
Yes.
And it doesn't look like, usually you can start to see, okay, there's a decline in the performance. So, and that's going to be like a slow burn for Aaron Rodgers. Like,
yeah,
we saw with like Philip Rivers, he slowly declined to where he's really not that exciting, right? Yep. He's not going to win you any games. So I think we're still a couple years away from Aaron Rodgers starting to like see a significant decline. Yep. And then we're probably like, if he keeps playing, we're probably 4 or 5 years away from him being what Philip Rivers is now.
Sure.
So if I look at it and I'm saying, okay, I could probably contend with Aaron Rodgers, because I know if you're concerned about Burrow's future and with the Bengals, these are not my words, these are your words. If you're concerned about Burrow's future in Cincy, why wouldn't you take the one in the bush and get some extra juice and get Aaron Rodgers and just ride him out for 4 or 5 years? Is it because you're worried about his injuries, or what is it?
I think it's value. I think Aaron Rodgers' value takes a big dive. Like, he had a poor season last year and his value plummeted. I don't think that's going to happen with Burrow, you know, for a long, long time. So I think,
okay,
I think Burrow is well insulated, and I can get more if I want to pivot, you know, with him. And he's, yeah,
so flexible.
And he's a lot, people target Burrow in trades and people don't target Aaron Rodgers in trades.
Yeah. So it's a flexibility. That's how I view all my rosters. I want to keep it as flexible. I want every single one of my players to provide flexibility. I'm okay having like a Julio Jones in there, just like one or two that I can't move, but they're going to be there if I need to try to compete, type of thing.
Yep. I agree.
Right. Which is the goal for me. But if I hit the reset button, I have Julio Jones, I'm okay having one of those. I'm just not okay having like 3 or 4 when I'm trying to hit the reset button.
Sure, I agree.
So yeah.
So we kind of got off base. We were talking about Joe Burrow, and then we kind of went off there. So the poll that you read through, you want to recap that once again, then we'll keep going.
Yeah, it is now at 76% for Herbert, 18% for Burrow, and 6% for Tua.
Good God, that poll has changed so much from last week. That's insane.
Yeah, they were both 42 each.
Tua got benched, Burrow got hurt, and everything changes, obviously.
Yes, which I'm okay with. I get it.
Yep, I agree. Get it. I'm with it. Yep.
The next one, we will go with the Juju, Deontay, Claypool trio, which we started 6 weeks ago after Claypool's big week. And last week it was 45 Deontay, 29 Juju, 26 Claypool. What is it this week?
Claypool caught another touchdown and he set a record. He is, I think, like one of the fifth wide receivers to ever have 10 touchdowns in his first 10 games or something like that. So
I think he was the first to do that.
I think it was the fifth wide receiver.
Maybe.
I don't know, whatever. It was something like that. There was a crazy stat like that.
I'd be surprised if five of them have had
But on the other hand, Deontay Johnson had like an insane, he had like 11 catches for
37 targets.
Yeah, basically, right? Just a ton of volume. It was crazy. And Juju,
do you want
was
me to
left
give you
the
stat
dust.
Lines?
What?
Do you want me to give you the target stat
might
lines
as well,
and all
yeah,
of
might
that
as well.
To give you your a better
I know that Claypool was like 8 or 9 targets. Deontay Johnson was like 11 or like 12 or 13 targets, or actually more than that, 15 okay. or 16 targets.
So Juju had 5 targets, 4 receptions, 19 yards.
Oof.
Claypool had 8 targets, 4 receptions, 59 yards, and a touchdown.
Yep.
Deontay Johnson had 16 targets, 12 receptions, 111 yards, no touchdowns.
Yeah, I love that volume. That's insane. So I'm going to say that Deontay continues to carry. And what was it last week again?
45. for Deontay, 28 or 29 for Juju, and 26 for Claypool.
I'm going to say 50-35-15 is what I meant to say.
50-35-15, and Juju being 15. After 136 votes, so still a little early because I tweeted it today, not too long ago, Deontay is at 60%.
Wow.
Claypool at 28, and Juju at 12.
So kind of the same essence of what I was going for, but just shifted up a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. And obviously Juju lost his 17%, and most of that, actually, Claypool has pretty much stayed the same. He went up a couple percent, but Deontay essentially took Juju's share.
That's crazy. Wow.
Which I get. I mean, it makes sense to me. Like, I used to be like, oh man, there's too much week to week shift, but it makes sense to me now. Like, I'm okay with this. This is a supply and demand issue. Like, nobody's demanding 4 receptions for 19 yards. They're demanding 12 for 111.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I mean, simply economics. I'm okay with it.
And that's a crap ton of volume, man. People feel good about that. Like, if Ben and the offense feels good about feeding him the ball that many times, you feel better about your receiver putting him in your lineup week to week.
And I tweeted that out in the first couple weeks, and I kept hammering that point. Like, you saw the Deontay's volume the first couple weeks before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you should be targeting. Like, you should be targeting players that were getting, I mean, I think he had 25 targets in his first 2 games.
Jeez.
And then he got hurt and everybody like fell asleep on him. And it's like, he's their guy. Like, he's the main guy.
Yeah, that's insane. You know? And I bought him in a bunch of spots. I feel pretty good about it.
You're welcome.
So at what point do you consider flipping him?
Deontay?
Yeah.
No, I think he's here. I think he's legit.
But like, is Ben Roethlisberger at the Phillip Rivers cliff anytime soon?
Dude, Big Ben was hurt last year and Deontay produced.
Okay, so you're not
with
concerned.
Hodges and Mason Rudolph. I think he's legitimately, you watch him off the line, you watch him as a route runner. He has his occasional drops, but he gets open.
Well, so you keep
he's
him.
A weapon.
Yeah.
I'm big fan. I'm Deontay Johnson fan club president.
But I remember at some point in the middle of the season, you became a little bit more concerned about his injuries.
Yeah, that's a different conversation. As long as it's not like continuously, it's not like a Will Fuller thing where every week he's, pulling his hammy.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I can live with a hammy injury every now and again. And I can even live with a Devontae Adams type career where concussions and hamstrings kind of limit his, you know, he's not getting 16 games, but when I'm plugging him into my lineup, he's getting me double digit targets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deontay's on pace for over, in the 16-game pace, he's over 160 target pace.
Yep, that's awesome.
Which is fantastic. I'm only the president of 4 fan clubs in my entire life. Aaron Foster fan club, Matt Stafford fan club, Derrick Henry fan club, and Deontay Johnson fan club.
Wow.
And the only reason I'm not a DeAndre Hopkins fan club is because, I mean, he's been legitimate from the beginning. Like, everybody was on that fan club.
Yeah.
So I can't really, but those 4 guys, there was a lot of doubters with Derrick Henry, a lot of doubters with these other guys, you know, so these are my fan club guys. So I feel really good about Deontay long-term. I don't put my fan club stamp of approval on many players.
We'll have to make a new badge in the Dynasty Trade Calculator tool called Izzy's Fan Club.
Izzy's Fan, yeah.
There you go.
So after 10 and a half weeks, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jonathan Taylor, new poll. We've kind of gotten a little bit of Clyde here. It was Clyde 74-26 last week. What is it this week?
JT had a good week. And like, if you watch the game, there was a number of carries that he had that looked really good that were called back from holding calls. I'm not sure if you saw that, but it was like maybe a half dozen. There was like 10 or 15 holding penalties by the Colts in that game. So JT was on the brink of having a really big game, and he had a big game, relatively speaking, in what his season's been. So I'm going to say that he's, with only half of a Clyde season, and knowing that this poll was tweeted before the game started, and a lot of people probably shifted to Jonathan Taylor, I'm going to say that it came back close to even. I'm going to say 55-45 for Clyde.
Pretty damn close. 57-43 for Clyde.
Okay. And I think as this game goes on, I think Clyde will continue to pull away.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got only one reception, but he's got 48 and a touch so far.
There's a whole half.
Few minutes into the second half. Yeah, you want to hear something nasty?
Yes, I
do. About this. So, in one of my leagues, I am going after Trevor Lawrence, and I'm currently tied for last place. And I've sold all my running backs to ensure that I don't have to start running backs ever. And right now, my running backs are Jordan Wilkins and Jonathan Ward. I literally don't have any running backs. Darius Geis is my only running back, and Eno Benjamin on my roster. I picked up Pierce and Nall just in case one of them like went off. But I haven't been starting any second running back. It's just been Jordan Wilkins.
Wow.
I've managed to win frustratingly 3 games. But it is what it is. Sorry, 2 games, but I'm probably going to win my 3rd here. The individual I'm going up against, who we know very well, decided to bench Clyde Edwards-Helaire this week.
No.
In favor of Adrian Peterson.
No.
And it's probably going to cost me Trevor Lawrence.
No way.
No.
That's dirty. That's dirty pool.
I'm up 10 points, 111 to 101. And he's got Tyreek left. So it's possible. But it would be in the bag if he would have just started Clyde instead of Adrian Peterson.
No way.
Not only did he... Come on now.
Yeah, that's painful, man. That is painful.
Yeah, Burrow got hurt. He has Burrow and Tua. Burrow got hurt. Tua got benched.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's frustrating. I'm not going to lie to you. If I don't win the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes because of the Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, combo platter,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be so upset.
That's impressive that he's only got 3 wins or whatever with that trio.
He's got this individual is 7-3.
Oh, so the person who's on your tail has 3 wins or whatever.
The person who's on my tail has 2.
Oh,
they actually have a really painful. Good team, but they only have 2 wins.
Wow.
But the person I'm going up against this week didn't start Clyde against me. He started Adrian Peterson against me.
So it wasn't because they were trying to tank. It was because they were... They just God screwed knows. Up. Yeah.
They thought, I don't know, oversight, or they thought Adrian Peterson would have a better
they overthought
performance
it. Yeah.
than Clyde. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's maddening. The person that's probably going to win Trevor Lawrence has a starting lineup of Cam, Big Ben, Zeke, Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, AJ Green. Let's see, who else would they be starting? Christian Kirk, Antonio Brown, and Logan Thomas.
Wow, geez.
And they're ahead of me in the standings.
That's insane.
It's frustrating. Or they're behind me in the standings.
Frustrations aside, I think we've got one more piece of business before we can cut it loose this week. You there was a poll that we tweeted out towards the beginning of the podcast. You wanted to recap at the very end here.
Oh yeah, what was that?
Was it the a Herbert poll?
Oh yeah, Herbert and Lamar. It is 74-26.
Wow. There it is.
On 314 votes.
I can't remember what I said. I thought it was going to be, but I'm sure that was around what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but.
Probably 70-30.
Not too bad. And our song is 61-39 in favor of Santana. Oh, 62-38 in favor of Santana. I will say, not a single person that commented in favor of Hero. And kind of brings me back to my point that I made with you. It is embarrassing think Hero is better than Maria.
I wouldn't.
Because it's
a
corny
comment.
Song.
Yeah, I wouldn't comment either.
Yeah, you would just be like, but the people that are on they're so confident and they're not embarrassed to actually think Maria is better than Hero, that they actually are coming out in droves, Hurley, questioning how this is a play.
Yeah, I understand where there's those comments. Like, I'll give an example. Alanis Morissette had a bunch of bangers, but I would never openly admit that on a Twitter poll. if it was up against something that was much more accepted, you know, much more cooler. Because I have to worry about my image on social media, you know.
There. So you are admittedly embarrassed.
The podcast, I don't care. I don't give a shit about the podcast. Like, you could think I'm a sissy nanny. I don't care. That's fine. Alanis Morissette had some bangers, man. And Ironic is not one of them.
that song slaps a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. I like good. That song. Yes, I did have Jagged Little Pill. I had that CD when I was like 10 years old.
It's phenomenal.
And I enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a good CD. Hearing it out. It was a good CD. She killed it.
That's all we got. And maybe John Mosher, the producer, will play us off with some Alanis Morissette. That's all we got this week. Thank you for listening to us once again. Make sure you check out our website, dynastytradecalculator.com. As the off-season kicks in, so does the production. We will ramp up everything and all of our content, all of our rankings. Everything never dies. It never goes away. So make sure that your teams, as you start to get further into the playoffs, you start making trades, check us out for all of that content, all the polls and everything else that we got on there. So there's just a ton of stuff coming out week to week. So check us out on Twitter at @FFDynastyTrades. Izzy is DTC_IZZE, and I'm at @FFHercules. The producer, John Mosher, at @DTC_JohnMosher. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye.